It's crazy cold outside.
Oh, it's going to get crazier. What?
He's singing.
Yeah. I'm just emphasizing the fact that it's going to get crazier.
You're singing.
It was melodic.
It was melodic.
It's going to get cold.
What do you say we do the whole show?
Let's do
like
the
that?
Whole show and sing. Yeah.
You know, people enjoy our singing.
I'm sure they
Good
do.
Good morning, Dean.
Good
morning, Andy.
Schwani. Hello, boys.
Get lots of mostly positive emails about our occasional breaks into song.
Oh, really?
Mostly people.
Well, let's continue and see
mostly,
how many more we get.
People like it. Some people say they want to stick pencils in their ears. I think I might fall into that category myself. Yeah, it's dangerously cold, and it's snowing.
Yep.
Lake effect snow could get an inch in places. It is gradually moving out, though. We could see an inch or two of accumulation in some places near the lake. But tonight, very cold, a low of one above. The wind chills down again, seriously bitter and dangerous tomorrow and Tuesday. You know, minus 15, that kind of thing.
Minus 15.
That doesn't sound good.
And that sort of thing.
And it isn't. It will be bitter.
You know, I saw somebody jogging this morning.
I've seen several people out jogging in this weather.
Isn't it not healthy to jog in when the weather's this cold?
Yeah, it's,
isn't it bad for your lungs?
It's hard to get the air in and out, yeah.
We should ask the good doctor when he comes on next half
she.
Hour.
We have a she
doctor. A she today? Oh, I said. All right, well, you're right. Okay.
We have a she doctor today.
Okay.
And so... We can ask her, too.
Yes.
She probably
she
also
know.
Knows.
Yes, absolutely.
A texter says, quit your yapping. The weather is normal. Stop being a wimp.
Thanks for texting.
Have a nice day.
Thanks for listening.
We've had below normal snow.
You know,
for the month of February.
The singing thing is not as entertaining as
no,
I thought
it
was
going to be. No, I think it's going anywhere.
Yeah. You know what this is, Schwani?
Will it go round in circles?
This is when a song was a song.
Will it go round in circles? Billy Preston.
Will it go high like a bird up in the sky?
I've got a story, ain't got
the great Billy Preston.
The late great Billy Preston.
The late great Billy Preston. Who was the very first musical guest on Saturday Night Live.
Ah.
50 years ago. Wow.
And one of the rare people invited to play along with the Beatles.
That's right.
When you hear the keyboard interlude in a song like Get Back, that's Billy Preston.
Billy Preston. Billy Preston. They had... You know, this is SNL weekend. 50th anniversary special is big 3-hour special tonight on NBC. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. But they did a Saturday Night Live homecoming concert on Friday night with all kinds of performers. That was, I didn't see it, but I've heard that it was amazing. And they re-ran the SNL music special last night.
I saw that.
Wasn't it great?
Fantastic.
Wasn't it great?
I forgot about some of the stories around some of the performances, like Elvis Costello stopping and not wanting to do the song that he said he was going to do, and
right.
Went out and did it. And then there were some issues with other performers as well.
Rage Against the Machine, that was a big deal. They had an upside-down flag as part of the
right.
set. That
tried to take it off.
Tried to take it, like, literally seconds before they were going on the air.
Yeah.
Stagehands were ripping it off the set. But the musical performers, oh, my gosh. You just forget how great that was. The musical part of the SNL legacy, how great it is. But that very first show, October of 1975, Billy Preston was the first guest, and singer Janis Ian.
I saw her interviewed the other night about that. and talked about what it was like. And she said everybody was very, very nervous.
Yeah,
that first evening. But yeah, they showed that clip of her singing the song at 17. Wow,
at 17,
that brought back some memories.
A beauty queen. I don't even know the words, but I remember the song. You know, it's little baby DJs back then.
Yep.
we played that song like crazy. It was number one. Oh, wait, that's the wrong song. Wait a second.
That's Billy Preston still.
I learned the truth at 17. Their love was meant for beauty queens.
Remember this?
And oh, yeah. High school girls with clear-skinned smiles who married young and then retired.
Yeah, soft rock, less talk.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning.
Yeah.
720 WGN.
We played this like crazy.
Oh, we did.
Over at the WFYR. At the Fire Radio. This was the number one song when she was on SNL that night. The very first SNL. This was the number one song in America. Then.
I don't think that was her first hit, though.
No, she had a song called
Society's Child.
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
The late 60s.
Yeah. But she looked scared to death while she was in this song.
Well, like she said, everybody was very, very nervous.
She looked so scared during the performance. And then at 10:30 last night, instead of a new SNL, they played the very first Saturday Night Live episode with George Carlin, sort of as the host, Buck Henry, the original... Not Ready for Primetime Players with Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Gilda Radner, Jane Curtin, Lorraine Newman, Garrett Morris. Who am I forgetting? Am I leaving somebody?
Was Bill Murray in the original?
No. He came in. Oh, Chevy Chase.
Chevy Chase was. Yeah.
Yeah, Chevy Chase. Bill Murray came after Chevy Chase. And that first SNL episode, man, was it awful. Wow. Maybe.
Well, by comparison, you know, I mean, we watching it when we did, you know, 50 years ago, we thought, well, okay, this is something different.
Yeah. But no, here's a text. 312 area code. Dean, the first SNL aired last night. Her performance was awful. The whole show was awful.
Yeah.
It was bad. First shows, first seasons. Watch the first season of Seinfeld.
I was just going to say.
Not that terrible. Great.
I was just going to mention that. Exactly.
Everybody yeah. Loves Raymond. You know, one of my favorite shows of all time. First season.
Not that good.
Mm-mm. Everybody didn't love Raymond that season. But, yeah, they were. But there were some moments, though, during the show. Aykroyd, Belushi... they did the bees. Remember the bees sketch that they used to do all the time?
Yeah.
That started on that first show. A couple of few things that were pretty funny.
There was a sketch that came later with John Belushi. It was a regularly occurring sketch that always made me laugh called The Thing That Wouldn't Leave. Mm. Remember that?
No.
You don't remember that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah. He was an unwelcome guest in someone's home. Mm. Who wore out his welcome a long time ago and driving the people crazy. And he's on the couch and he's like, oh, boy, I could use some more potato chips. Oh, can I stay another night?
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that. You remember that, Andy?
I do.
Yeah.
And he did the samurai, too, didn't he?
Samurai.
Samurai was awesome.
That was funny.
Yeah, the samurai deli samurai.
Yeah.
Belushi was a genius.
Yeah. He was awesome.
Just a crazy genius. And I think it was during the music special that they did where they talked about the Blues Brothers, how Belushi and Aykroyd pitched the concept of doing the Blues Brothers as a sketch. And the producer, Lorne Michaels, turned it down, said he didn't think there was anything funny about it. And then they wound up being 3 minutes short on that week's show. And... they said, yeah, go ahead, go ahead and do the Blues Brothers, make fools of yourself. It doesn't matter. It's the last 3 minutes. And they did the Blues Brothers. And look how they're still popular.
Yep.
And that movie that they made, does anybody remember seeing the making of that movie? I remember that watching scenes being made while they were making the shutting down of Daly Center.
Hmm.
What mall did they use for?
Dixie Square.
Yeah.
And was it Dalton or Harvey? South Suburban, the mall had closed.
Right. Yeah.
But it was still intact, and they restocked it and tore it up. Dixie Square Shopping Center. Yeah. Some good memories.
And you see store signs that are long gone as you watch that, you know, the chase inside the mall.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. This SNL special I'm looking forward to tonight. I'm going to hunker in and...
Are you making any special food?
I haven't planned on it right at the moment. Would you like something?
Well, I want to taste those gyros, nachos.
Gyros.
What are we going to do with him?
When you learn how to say it properly, maybe I'll make some.
Okay.
Give me some. I'd like a gyro sandwich, please.
Well, you said they turned out really well. That would be a perfect...
That would be good tonight.
Item for a cold evening to watch this special show.
Yeah. I'm half thinking about chili. Making some
chili is always,
Making a chili tonight.
Yep.
Or maybe just a nice carry out.
That's even better. Don't have to clean that up.
Did I say carry out? I meant deliver it right to my door.
Yeah, they have those services now where they do that.
Yeah. Well, I'm
boy. What do they think of next?
Uh-huh. I'm thinking of starting one called Dean Dash, where people put their orders in, I cook it, and then deliver it to your house
when you feel like it.
Yeah.
When you arrive,
I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
If I feel like it. Yes, I put an order in an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, and your point is?
Yeah, I made it. I just don't feel it's too cold to go outside.
Or I made it. It was so good, I finished it.
Yeah, it's almost.
I just ate it myself.
Sorry, it's mostly gone now.
I can offer you half.
I don't know. I don't know why Dean Dash isn't taking off.
Dean Dash.
I mean, the business model looks solid.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really have all the ingredients in the house, so I just didn't do it. I probably should have called you back, but
why don't you bring some paprika by, and then we'll make it work.
I started watching an I Love Lucy episode. Lucy and Ethel were up to some
hijinks. I had to recharge my phone.
Yeah, my phone was dead.
I couldn't call you.
Let's see what we've got. They're going to do a big renovation at Ravinia starting this year.
Yeah, I heard about that.
We're going to talk to the president and CEO of Ravinia.
Renovate the pavilion? The grounds?
The grounds.
Wow.
$75 million renovation.
Wow, project. Okay.
Man.
Yeah. So that's going to be coming up. We'll talk with the president and CEO of the Ravinia. Coming up in just a little while. What else do we have on the show today?
I don't know.
The doctor?
What's a rhetorical question? That was a rhetorical question. Yes, we have Dr. Lauren Taglia, a dermatologist. You got to be careful in this cold weather on your skin. How's your epidermis today, Shawnee?
I've got all kinds of questions for a dermatologist.
Oh, good. But,
that'd be good to get her advice on, especially with these wind chills with frostbite that you can get in minutes.
Yeah.
So don't mess with that.
Well, put on this gown and just sit right here, and we'll get right to you for the questions. Opening goes in the back.
Thank you.
Thanks for that visual image.
Oh, boy.
Also, we're going to share a couple of interviews that I did. I was in London this past week.
Oh, that's right. You were over there. Yeah. You were across the pond.
I was across the pond.
I say, Governor, and how was your trip?
It was absolutely delightful.
Was it delightful?
Thank you for your inquiry.
Jolly good. Jolly good.
I shall enjoy your fish and chips. I had some really good fish and chips.
Do they make fish and chips dry gyros?
That might be a good nacho platter.
That would be.
With some nice fried, you know, fish and French fries and stuff like that. Fish and chips. I might steal that idea.
Definitely. For a night like tonight, yeah.
Well, anywho, I was there most of the week, this past week, and interviewed Robert Pattinson, who many of you know from the Twilight movie series. He is the Batman and the latest series of Batman movies. He's got all kinds of movies out and is in a new sci-fi comedy called Mickey 17. Talked with him on the red carpet. We'll share some of those interviews coming up a little bit later on. Sounds like a pretty full show, right?
It does.
It does.
Oh, I think it's fine.
I do, too. I do, too. 630 area code says I'm making pot roast tonight.
That's a good one.
That sounds good.
Yep.
847, Dean, I made turkey, sweet potato, and black bean chili yesterday.
Oh. Mm.
That sounds good.
That's delicious.
Yeah, that's good. I was thinking about sweet potato and some kind of sweet potato chili, something like that. I was thinking about that. That might be a good combo platter.
I did fish with a sweet potato and roasted vegetables this week.
Lovely.
It was very good.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
No.
Andy?
I'm good. I'm starting to figure out what I want to have for dinner.
I had, by the way, Andy, the vegetables were cruciferous vegetables.
Oh, okay.
Broccoli, not cauliflower.
They're not
your favorite.
They're not deciduous?
No. Those are trees.
Did you look at that time? Did you look at... See what time it is. So when I was in London last week, I can't tell you the number of chaps and chapettes that walked up to me and said, pardon me, but aren't you with WGN in Chicago?
I say, Governor.
I say, Faversham.
And what was your reply?
I said, well, yes, I am.
And what did they say?
We enjoy listening to the far-flung forecast. With that schwami. What? Salami.
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 So for all of you listening across the pond, here's Dave Salami.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Richards. And good morning, everybody. So if you're across the pond or right here in the good old U.S. of A.
Where is my protractor?
You need your compasses, your protractor, or
I've
your
got
newfangled,
my newfangled device.
And we go south today to Hodgenville, Kentucky.
Oh, my.
Hodgenville, Kentucky is in the central part of the state, named for Robert Hodgen.
Hmm.
He was someone from Pennsylvania there who, right after the Revolutionary War, moved to the area, purchased a bunch of land, and thus the town became Hodgenville, Kentucky. It was formally incorporated in February of 1836, almost 200 years ago, actually. But we bring up Hodgenville today because nearby, at an area called the Sinking Spring Farm,
wow,
a very, very, very famous person was born.
Huh.
And because this is President's Day weekend, we thought it would be appropriate to talk about and honor.
Let me guess. Abe Lincoln?
Yes, sir. Born there in near Hodgenville, Kentucky.
Honest Abe?
Honest Abe, February 12th. Of 1809.
Lincoln carpeting?
No, it had nothing to do with Lincoln carpeting. And the phone number was not National 29000 either. But Dean, seriously, I wondered if you knew this. You might, because I know, you know Tom Hanks and have interviewed him numerous times.
Oh, yes.
Did you know that Tom Hanks is a distant relative of Abraham Lincoln's mother, Nancy Hanks.
I did not know that.
Yes, Nancy Hanks was her name before she married Abraham's father, Thomas Lincoln.
Huh.
But there is a distant relation between the Hanks family of that time and Tom Hanks's family of this time.
Huh.
And he's talked about that on a number of occasions, but I thought that was an interesting item to bring up.
Tom is also a tall glass of water.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. But Hodgenville, Kentucky is affected by the flooding that we've been reporting on this morning. And again, part of that huge winter storm that's moving across the central U.S. and out toward the East Coast. They have an area flood watch there now. Cloudy skies in Hodgenville, birthplace of Abraham Lincoln. It's 31 degrees there.
Lincoln Park Towing.
And Lincoln Park Towing.
all the things that Lincoln's famous for. This week joining us is Dr. Lauren Taglia, dermatologist with Northwestern Regional Medical Group. Dr. Taglia, welcome back to the show. Very nice to talk to you again. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You surviving this cold weather out there?
Oh, gosh, we're trying, aren't we?
Well, I think we all are, except we all aren't noticing the effects of the cold weather on our skin. And that's why I wanted to kind of talk about the area of the cold weather with relation to what precautions we need to be taking in weather like this. How damaging is a cold day like we have today and that will even get colder the next couple of days?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our skin is the largest organ of our body, and it's definitely the one most exposed and susceptible to injury with, you know, cooler temperatures, cold weather, both indoors and out. Outside it's cold, and indoors it's dry from the forced heat. So we definitely have to take precautions in the winter that we don't necessarily take the same in the summer.
What's happening? I mean, I get the forced heat part. But is the extra frigid weather outside, what's happening with that causes stress on our skin?
Oh, sure. Great question. You know, our skin is, you know, a very tight barrier. And so with the cooler temperatures and our skin and our body's ability to kind of shift the blood, you know, away from the skin to keep the organs warm, that barrier is more susceptible to injury when it's cold. And certainly as we get older, we know our barrier, that outside layer, is also more susceptible to the elements. And so it's not unusual that, you know, as time goes on, my older patients come in, you know, with concerns about dry, flaking skin on the hands and on the face. And again, we just see that more in the winter when we're out in the elements.
And does that have something to do with the circulation of blood? When you get older, things slow down a little bit, and it doesn't act as a protectant as it once did when you were younger?
Oh, sure. I think it's multifactorial. You know, circulation's a big thing. A lot of the medicines our patients are on, you know, think about things like cholesterol medicines. You know, those make us a bit more, again, like our barrier more susceptible to injuries. And then some of the folks, you know, as kids had eczema, so they have conditions where their skin is more kind of fragile and sensitive. And so then When you're in the elements like the cold, you were just more prone to skin breakdown. So a lot of the things, you know, dermatologists, like what we recommend to our patients is really protection, you know, protecting, you know, from the elements, from the cold, and from the susceptibility for skin breakdown.
All right. Well, let's talk about those protections then. I know for me, I slather myself up with moisturizer, you know, like I'm a Thanksgiving turkey getting basted going into the
very
oven.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. Your dermatologist would be proud of you. you're following our recommendations. Well, I always, you know, share with patients it starts with our showers. So when we're in our showers or we're taking a bath, when, you know, we want to be mindful of the temperature. So you don't want super hot temperatures in the shower, because the heat can also make the skin more susceptible to dryness. So you really want warm temperature water. And if you're a hot shower person and you want to keep it short, okay, so you want like 5 to 10 minutes. And then immediately when you get out of the shower while your skin is still wet, that's when you want to apply a thicker cream to kind of lock in the moisture from the shower. So within the first 2 minutes, that's when you really want to get your moisturizers on. And think you want something thick, you know, maybe something you have to scoop out of a jar or something you have to squeeze versus a lotion. The lotions tend to be more water-based, and they're not as good at locking in the moisture. So that may be fine in the summer, but in the cooler temperatures like we're experiencing here, you want the creams or the thick, you know, the thick lotion.
No, my grandmother, I remember back in the day, would take a big scoop of Vaseline out of her, you know, with her fingers, and baste herself up like that. Is that a good moisturizer?
You know what? Yes, she's a very wise woman. So Vaseline is petrolatum jelly, and you really can't get better than that. Not everyone likes the way that feels. It's maybe not as elegant. So we have some more options today than the Vaseline. But if you had 100 dermatologists lined up, that's our favorite recommendation is Vaseline. So she was before her time.
Yeah, but boy, that's greasy. I mean, I've tried it. It's so that's why you try to find something that you think works best for you. I'm not necessarily looking for a brand recommendation, but really, what should somebody be looking for? Is there a certain ingredient? Is there a certain? I imagine SPFs must also play a part of this as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. So when we're thinking about like a moisturizer, we might want to break that up between the face and the body. So when we're talking about the shower, you're thinking about something thick, kind of fragrance-free, and looking for the words cream or balm, moisturizing. It should say something like that on the label. I think there are some brands like CeraVe, Cetaphil, Vanny Cream. Those are brands that you can find at the local, drugstore that are, well-priced, and they have all the right ingredients in there. Fragrances, especially in the cooler weather months, can, for some people, be irritating. So looking for a fragrance-free formulation, and again, something that's a cream from any of those brands are great starting places and kind of safe for all. That's something for the body. Now, for the face, you bring up a great point and something I was going to try to remind the audience. SPF, I know many of us think about it more naturally if we're going to the pool or, sure, out to the beach, but it is definitely something we want all year round because the UV index, we still are getting it even in the wintertime. And people who are out, enjoying the colder weather, maybe they're skiers or snowshoe people, they're going to be out in the elements. So, every day we need an SPF. So, don't forget about it in the winter.
Should you be using different moisturization on your hands as you would your body, as you would your face?
Yes. A lot of the times, sure, you want something for the face that is designed just for kind of face moisturization plus SPF. Those are going to be a little bit, they're going to be prepared a little more gently since the face, the skin's a little different than the body. Plus, our face can be prone to breakouts like acne. So a lot of the facial moisturizers are non-comedogenic, meaning they're not going to bring on, say, like an acne breakout.
Somebody on our text line is asking, do statins affect your skin in the wintertime?
Yes, they can. They could affect our skin all year round. The way I like to explain it to our patients is those medicines are really, they're life-saving medicines for many of us that are, that have that cardiac history and high cholesterol. But they can make our skin more susceptible to dryness. So in the winter, just think, hey, I'm even more susceptible being outdoors. So doubling down on moisturizers are really important.
The 708 area code is asking, my family has a history of skin cancer? Is it something which is hereditary?
Oh, great question. There are, yes, I would say there is a genetic predisposition. So if family members in particular have skin cancer like melanoma, then yes, your risk is higher compared to somebody without that family history. So, you know, we recommend anybody with a family history of melanoma or non-melanoma skin cancer. Those are like the basal cell skin cancers or squamous cell skin cancers, that they be, you know, screened with a full body skin exam from a board certified dermatologist.
Are there precautions that people should take with regard to skin cancer? I know fair skinned people tend to be more prone to it. If I'm correct, I might be 100% wrong on that, but I think that's true, right?
Yeah. You know, our fair-skinned patients are more susceptible to, you know, the sun and that element. But, you know, really patients of all skin types can, and we've seen, develop skin cancer. So, you know, a few things we like to advocate. You know, we certainly do not advocate people being hermits and, you know, indoors at all times. But we do know that the sun is a risk factor for developing skin cancer. So we just want to be wise when we're out in the sun. And there's a few things we can do. I mean, I think the big thing that you're going to hear from all of us is sunscreens. You know, those are the filters that we put on the skin that are going to help protect, you know, our cells and their DNA from damage from the sun. So we have to apply an SPF of at least 30 or more. We got to apply enough. So you want almost like a shot glass worth of sunscreen applied head to toe. And you're going to want to apply it every 90 minutes when you're out in the elements. That's a big thing, is applying enough and reapplying it when we're out. But then there are some other things that we can do that are beyond just the sunscreen. So when we're out, you know, choosing the times that we're out, you know, maybe avoiding, if you can, maybe especially with little ones, avoiding those peak sun hours, you know, the 10 to 2 when we know the sun is most intense. And when we're out, if we're out during those times, you know, really trying to seek out shade when you're out there, looking for an umbrella or, you know, kind of looking for some coverage. And another thing that I think is becoming more readily available and is a great option are the clothing with UPF, which is like the equivalent of SPF in our sunscreens or sun filters, because those are great. You know, they don't wear off. If we forget to reapply, we're still being protected. They give you about 99% coverage, you know, from the sun. So they're really great, especially in our patients that are really active, you know, think like runners and bikers or, you know, parents with small kids at a pool. You know, the parents are probably the last to reapply sunscreens. So those, you know, those the clothing can be a really nice option for coverage.
Yeah, but still you need to protect your head, right? Your face.
Oh,
the
absolutely.
Areas that this clothing is not covering. And, you know, I speak on behalf of all bald men everywhere.
You
got to keep that dome. You got to keep that dome laddered up there.
Oh, absolutely. Hats are great ways too, especially ones with a nice brim. You know, those can be really helpful because they'll cover around the ears and the back of the neck. I mean, those are some of the most aggressive cancers we can see are the ones that develop, you know, on the tops of the ears, on the neck, on the scalp, to your point. So you're right. And, you know, I know that the scalp is a harder area to apply. Some of my patients, you know, especially golfers, will say, gosh, I hate when that stuff is running and it burns my eyes. So there are some formulations that are like dry touch. So those might be a little bit easier for the scalp. But to your point, I think hats are really good because they kind of give you that full protection.
Yeah, I have not opened the moonroof of my car, the sunroof, whatever you call it, of my car, ever since my doctor said, you got to keep that dome protected.
And that's right.
I used to enjoy opening up that sunroof and, you know, feeling the air and feeling the sun. And now I may as well be driving in a beekeeper suit. That's how protected I am right now.
A
texter on the 630 says, can you ask the doctor if SPF is cumulative? By that, I mean I use an SPF of 50, and then over that I put my makeup on that is 20 SPF. Am I now getting 70 SPF?
Oh, that's a great question, and that's one we get quite a bit. I would say no. So sounds like she's doing a great job because her base SPF, like her base layer that was 50, that's right what we recommend. So that's perfect. You know, with our makeups, some of the makeup formulations will have an SPF. They're not as well designed or good at sun protecting. And so when we kind of layer on sort of multiple layers of SPF, they don't, you know, because they're designed and formulated differently, they're not cumulative. But what she's doing sounds perfect. You know, doing that base layer at 50 is exactly what we would recommend. But I just think about that sun, that makeup, the sun protection found in the makeup is not really doing a whole heck of a lot.
Okay.
Really, the weight, you know, the weight is being brought on by the sunscreen that she's doing.
Okay, Dr. Lauren Taglia, a dermatologist, Northwestern Regional Medical Group. You are on the air with Matt. Hello, Matt. You're on WGN.
Hi, doctor. I was hoping you could be a little more specific about a couple of things because there's a lot of data and a lot of research about products, sunscreens, the CeraVe that are endocrine disruptors that actually cause cancer. That, you know, you're kind of banishing the sun. The sun is the giver of life, and there are, like, zinc, I know, is a safe thing, but so many of these products out there that people pick off the shelf are toxic for you, and it's going right into your biggest organ of your body.
Yeah, Matt, thank you for bringing that up, because I do think that those are conversations that we have with a lot of our patients on a day-to-day basis. You know, I think there's more to be understood and studied when it comes to the endocrine disruptors of the sunscreens and sun filters that are out there. We have plenty of exhaustive data about the benefits of using a sun protection, because we know with unprotected skin that we will develop skin cancer. You know, skin cancer is the number one cancer that people, and not just Americans, but people deal with. And we know our best protection is a sunscreen. I think over the last few years, there's been a lot of good disruption and good conversation around the safety of sunscreens. We fortunately have a ton of data about the safety of them. Now, there are lots of opportunities, I think, for developing more sun filters, because there are more conversations now about selection of sun filters. And this might be a more exhaustive conversation, but with the filters are not all created equal, to your point. I think when we have patients that have sensitive skin and that are concerned about absorption, you know, we tend to kind of point people in the direction of the physical filters, the zinc and the titanium dioxide that you bring up. But the conversation, I will say, is just more nuanced when it comes to the other filters that you're bringing up.
Yeah, maybe topic for another conversation. Hopefully we can do one soon. A real pleasure to have you, doctor. Thank you so much. Dr. Lauren Taglia, dermatologist, Northwestern Regional Medical Group. I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dean. Thanks for having me.
I'm always so amused by what's going on our text line.
It's always great to hear from people that check in.
Well, mostly, yes.
Well, yeah, it is.
There's one text that just came in of suggesting other topics that they would like us to cover on our medical segment.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Is that right? Can you name them?
Not a one.
Okay.
All right.
Not a one.
All right. Leave it to the imagination, then.
But yes, leave it to, yes, and to your proctologist also. great memories, a lot of Saturday Night Live memories. All this weekend, the big SNL 50th anniversary special is tonight at 7 o'clock, three-hour special on NBC. Remember this one from 1978?
Oh.
Steve Martin?
The best.
My favorite honky.
He's my favorite honky.
Born in Arizona, moved to Babylona.
You know, today it's significant also because it was February 16th, 1923, that the burial chamber of King Tutankhamun was unsealed in Egypt by English archaeologist Howard Carter. So that's sort of, that's not exactly when they discovered King Tut, but that's when they went in, into the tomb, start pulling stuff out of there.
Do you remember when the exhibit was here at the Field Museum?
Oh, are you kidding me?
What, about, 45 years ago or so
now? It was
now.
The late 70s,
yeah,
I want
yeah.
to say.
You meant 78 there with Steve Martin's song.
Right around that time, around 78-ish, that the exhibit was over at the Field Museum. Yeah, I went to see it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty cool. The stuff that they found in the tomb, that's just fascinating to me, how they put parts of the person's life in these tombs. The famous mask, the King Tut burial mask, which is on display, I think, at the Museum of Egypt, something like that now.
In Cairo, Egypt.
Cairo. But they found, what, his car keys, they found.
They found his phone.
My car keys were somehow in there. That's where I left them.
That is on my to-do list yet in my travels.
Go to Egypt?
Yeah, that's on my list. Definitely want to see the pyramids and the Sphinx and
let's go.
All of that. We can do the show from there.
You know how fun it would be if we took a group of
talk
listeners.
About a far-flung forecast.
How fun would it be if we took a group of listeners and went to Egypt and we all dressed up like King Tut
and did the dance that Steve Martin did on the show?
Buried in his jammies.
And about every 10 minutes, I would break into the song Walk Like an Egyptian.
Way-o. Here we are singing again.
Yeah, we're not ugly Americans at all. How fun would that be?
That would be fun.
Yep. Let's do it.
A big group excursion.
That's quite an excursion, too.
Yeah, that would be fun.
No, I definitely want to go there and visit that. And I understand that, you know, that things like the pyramids, they have to be really seen to be totally experienced. They are amazing.
Well, to me, it blows my mind when I see, you know, documentaries on the Sphinx and the pyramids and, you know, how did they build them?
But right.
I've never seen them in person, but I can only imagine that my mind would be even more blown by seeing it all in person.
Yeah, definitely. Nothing like going there and experience it for yourself, you know, if you're able to do so.
Yeah.
So definitely would like to see that.
Well, 102 years ago is when they went in, and they just start pulling stuff out of there. like it was one of those moving companies. I guess there's a fair amount of controversy. I mean, maybe we should do a story on it.
Well, isn't that, you know, that was all the start of, you know, the curse of King Tut's tomb, and the men got sick and, you know, that sort of thing, and probably spawned stories like The Mummy. The movie that was made just a few years after that, the original one with Boris Karloff.
Let's say that we're on this expedition.
Okay.
And somehow the tomb opens up. Would you go in?
I'd go in.
I wouldn't go in.
You wouldn't go in.
I'd let you go in.
And then close the door behind me is what you'd do. Hey, look, that's what you'd do.
Hey, look, Schwanny, there's a pile of 45 RPM records.
Oh, King Tut liked the Beatles.
Wasn't there a Batman villain, King Tut?
Yes, there was.
Oh, man.
It was Victor Buono, I think, played King Tut.
Oh, Lord. Here we go.
Who had Batman references on the show today? It's 10:18. This is Dean Richards. Sunday morning on WGN, whether it's the sweet sound of Sweet Baby James, or the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Earth, Wind, and Fire, some of the greats in jazz, Ravinia brings it all to us in summertime. We're so lucky to have such an amazing venue here in the Chicago area, up in Highland Park, as we have for decades now. And this week, Ravinia announced a sweeping plan for a $75 million renovation for North America's longest-running outdoor musical festival. It's going to be, it already was spectacular, but sure sounds like it's going to be even more so. Jeffrey Hayden's the president and CEO of Ravinia. And Jeffrey, welcome back to WGN. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks so much for having me here on a wintry morning, a little far from summer, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm not hearing any construction machinery in the background, so I'm guessing that work has not started up there. But I would guess that is the renovation project going to begin this year, or are you going to wait until the 2025 season is over to begin it?
So we've actually broken this up into a couple of phases, and I love how you picked James Taylor for the opener, because in many ways, that was the quiet phase one. We actually bought a brand new sound system for Ravinia for last summer, and James Taylor was the first artist to play on it. Mm. And after his sound check, I talked with him, and he just stood back and said, "This is the best sound system I played on in a long time. Wow. I love this."
Wow. Yeah, that's high praise coming from somebody like him. I didn't know that. I chose him just because he's one of my summertime favorites at Ravinia, you know, who always comes up there and, you know, blows the place to pieces with his incredible music. Talk to me about what this $75 million project will entail. I mean, it's you're really kind of rehabbing the whole joint pretty much.
Well, Ravinia is a beautiful place, and it's also the oldest music festival in North America, as you said, and we have a number of stages, and all of them have not been renovated for decades, and both the technology that's needed to produce concerts and just the wear and tear have taken a toll on all of the stages, and as we are coming out of the pandemic, we realized that not all of the equipment worked as well as it needed to, and we had our big milestone, 125th anniversary, coming up in 2029. So wouldn't this be a perfect opportunity to fix up all of our stages for now and future generations?
So let's start off with the main pavilion. What will happen there?
So we actually are on our first official phase one right now. We started the day after the 2024 summer season ended. We got kicked out of our offices, and we've actually been doing a lot of work backstage. Had to get upgraded power and water, and finally get a loading dock that works for a semi-truck instead of a rental truck, and just to start to make some more space underground to support all the equipment that's needed. The public will only see one little sliver of improvement this next summer, but I think they'll be excited about it, which is the south bathrooms, the bathrooms on the south side of the pavilion will be renovated and updated. So I know that everybody will be flush with excitement with that.
You've been waiting to use that line, haven't you? Be
flush. I'm a dad at heart. What can I say, Dean?
That is a dad joke, if ever I've heard one. The pavilion also will be renamed as well, right?
It will be. When we were in the early stages of understanding the scope of the project, it quickly snowballed from just replacing the incandescent lights to LED lights to really looking at a complete gut renovation. And that's a much, obviously more expensive project. And we're so grateful that the Hunter family came forward to want to have a legacy opportunity for their parents. And so we're pleased to rename the pavilion when we're done with the second phase in 2026, the Hunter Family Pavilion.
Yeah, in honor of Maxine and Thomas B. Hunter III, a $10 million gift to Ravinia from the Hunter Family Foundation. Now, how about the lawn areas? I mean, you already made some changes during COVID. You made some structural changes to where people can sit and what they can reserve, and that's gotten just so much praise. Is any of that going to change? Sight lines, anything like that going to change?
The main scope will be the pavilion, and I can tell you some of those improvements in a second. But for the lawn, we will continue to have reserved seating on the lawn with the screen. People love that, and at some point we might upgrade that a little bit. But there will be one noticeable improvement for people on the north lawn starting in 2026. We're actually going to be inspired by what happened on the south lawn and put another large screen permanently for the north lawn on the corner, outside the corner of the pavilion, so you'll actually be able to see the stage.
Yeah, that's great. And people do love that, the big screens. Although, I mean, you know, I've been coming out there since I was a young man, and there was nothing I liked better sometimes than just sitting out on the lawn. And, you know, you bring your picnic with you and enjoy whatever band you're listening to, go out and listen to the CSO. I mean, there was something lovely about just kind of taking in the environment along with the music. But seeing the stage is not a terrible thing also. What about some of the other structural changes that will be made? The carousel stage, is that going to remain? Is that going to be changing at all? I know that's one of the original structures in the park.
In the future, we will end up building a new outdoor stage. We're finding that there's a great need and opportunity to do that. But at this point, our main focus will be the pavilion. And so when people come in 2026 to see everything redone, they're going to be greeted with all new seats that are much more comfortable, sized accordingly for us now, with drink holders, new lighting, of course, the new sound system, and the acoustics will continue to improve. We're actually ripping out the entire acoustic shell around the stage, and we've contracted with the great American company Wanger, and they're building a brand new shell that pulls out those features from the Martin Theater and sort of repeats them inside. So I think the orchestra is going to be pleased. I think the audience will be pleased. And part of that will also be expanding the stage, making it a little deeper. So when we have a piano concerto or an orchestra with chorus or a pops show with an opener, it's going to be a lot easier to be able to produce all those things.
Yeah, I would have to think that there are very unique requirements of a sound system, of the acoustics, because of the wide diversity of the kinds of performances that you put on, whether it's James Taylor on a guitar or the full Chicago Symphony Orchestra. That's a tall order to fill, and it sounds like you're addressing all those things.
It's hard to find any other stage in the country that produces such a wide variety of music as Ravinia does. And so I really applaud our production team, our union stagehands, and our consultant crew for really figuring out how to best accommodate all those different needs. And we're excited about the benefit for the artists and the public going forward.
Yeah. What about any changes at all to getting food, getting in and out of the park? Any renovations there?
So as we look ahead, there will be, in the pavilion, there will be some better accessibility, so it'll be a lot easier to maneuver in there. We will experiment going into 26 and 27. And with some further, you know, food and beverage options. We're continuing out beyond the pavilion and the rest of the park to do more upgrades to our food program, and people have been noticing that over the last couple of years, the improvement in the food program. And, of course, we're continuing to work with Metra and the city of Highland Park to make sure that it's really easy for people to be able to get into Ravinia and to get out of Ravinia. And that's just a continuous improvement.
That sounds great. If people want to kind of keep up on what's going on or learn more, best way to do that would be at ravinia.org, I imagine.
Absolutely, and it's also fun. There's some great videos there of some animations of what the pavilion will look and feel like, and also some historic videos of the building of the original pavilion, and I think people will see that we really worked hard to keep that iconic feel of the original pavilion while updating it. So if people are interested, we invite them to put their name on a seat, on a brick, or maybe even on a star dressing room. It's going to take the whole community to finish supporting this big project.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be great. Keep us posted so we can let everybody know. I know that the 2025 season of performances will begin on June the 6th. And when will tickets begin going on sale for this year's season?
Sorry, we'll announce the full season on March 13th, so a little less than a month away, and then tickets will start to go on sale for donors shortly thereafter and a few weeks later to the full public.
Yeah, I know you can't give me any details on who's going to be performing this year, but I have to think that many of the Ravinia favorites will be included as part of that schedule.
Well, there were a couple that were announced earlier, and you played them with James Taylor and Earth, Wind, and Fire. James called us up the next day after he was here last year and said, I want to come back.
Oh, that's
good. Absolutely.
That's so great. That's so great. There's been, such a great lineup. Our sports anchor here on the Sunday morning show, Andy Mazur, you went to Ravinia multiple times. Past summer, right?
Yeah, in the last 3 years, it was the first times I've been there because I was doing baseball so much I was not free during the summer. But we have some friends, my wife and I have some friends that put on big parties for us out there, and they stake out their spots because they're donors, and we have a blast every time we go.
Who's your favorite that you've seen at Ravinia?
Well, I have to, James Taylor was pretty good last year.
Yeah.
We saw Sting a couple of years ago. We saw Stevie Nicks a couple of years ago. And we saw Yacht Rock Review.
You are the Yacht Rock
King. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Out there. Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to announcing that new lineup, Jeffrey. Thank you very much for the update on the $75 million renovation at Ravinia Festival up in Highland Park. You want more info, ravinia.org. Jeffrey, thank you very much. Hope you have a great Sunday today, and we'll talk soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Gene. Look forward to talking to you again in a few weeks with the season lineup.
Why are we playing the Food Time Open right now? Because I made a mistake and pushed the wrong button, that's why. Because we were talking about food and all things culinary with our next guest, who is actually kicking off our theater segment today. The Weekend Theater. What's going on stage in Chicago? A live performance this morning. First, though, I just wanted to invite you to our next Dean's Night Out, which is going to be at the Paramount Theater in Aurora to see the Chicago area premiere of Waitress. These are the final hours. To go to WGNradio.com/contest. And enter for a chance to be one of our 10 winners to get two tickets to the February 23rd performance of the show. We have a nice little meet and greet with me, and then we enjoy the show. So if you're interested in going, all you have to do is go to WGNradio.com/contest to get all the details. But for now, this morning,
you've got to get up. Every morning, with a smile on your face.
From the current production of Beautiful, the Carole King musical, that's out at the Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. Samantha Gershman, sounding fantastic and very Carole King-like in the show. I just realized we had Jessie Mueller, the original actress who played Carole King in Beautiful, last week on the show, and now Samantha on the show. So apparently, every week we're going to have somebody who played Carole King on the show. That's going to be our new theme. Samantha, welcome
Hi.
To WGN. Why were you grimacing when this came on?
Oh,
is that just actors who don't like to hear themselves?
I think so. I have never liked to. I don't like to hear myself sing, watch my... I mean, I will say that it's helpful because then I'll note myself.
Yeah.
But
you know how fantastic you sound, though, right?
I will take the compliment.
Well, just for the sake of promoting the show, let's all just all agree that you sound great.
Yes.
Because I think you do actually sound great.
Thank you.
And we were talking about cooking right before the segment started, because they told you that I also do a cooking segment here on radio, but also on WGN-TV. So we're going to figure out a time for you to come on and cook.
Yes, we're going to make all the things.
Yes.
I have to figure out what, though.
We'll figure that out.
Exactly, because I'm thinking, I could make my mom's brisket, but that takes hours.
That takes a long time. Yeah, I've done briskets for, St. Patrick's Day. I've done them for Jewish holidays.
Yeah, what kind of are we talking? You put it in the slow cooker?
In
the oven, long and slow?
I've done it both ways, but, for a four-minute television segment... You got to start 2 days ahead of time.
True,
and get everything
true.
And really just warm it up.
You're right.
For TV.
Strike the brisket. We're making something else.
Yeah. Burgers. It's going to be burgers. We'll figure out all of that out. How much fun are you having in Beautiful, the Carole King music?
Oh, I am. This is my comfort music. I always call it my chicken soup for the soul because the music, if I were to put on music to make myself get in a good mood or just feel better, whatever it is, just get a little closer to home, I put on Carole King. And I'm not just saying that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you because we had Jessie Mueller on the show last week. I was I haven't listened to Carole King in a long time. I wish I still had my Tapestry album, the actual vinyl album. I don't have any of my vinyl anymore, but I went back and listened to the album and I thought, oh my gosh,
these are
some of the greatest songs that have ever been recorded.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Beautiful, the Carole King musical is about, because it's the story of Carole King from being a young girl up until the legendary status that she now enjoys, telling her story and how all of these songs, not only Tapestry, but even all the ones before that, how everything came to be, right?
Oh, it's great. I mean, I feel like the show really honors her kind of from every angle, in the sense of just it honors her as just a little girl kind of getting her start, and it honors her work ethic, and it honors her as a human being. It honors her as a songwriter, as a storyteller, and as a singer and as a performer, and just it really honors her from every which way. We see her writing, we see her inspirations, we see her performing, we see her. I think something that is my favorite part about Carole King is how giddy she gets when she sees other people performing her song. And I have her book on replay. What I mean by that is I've been listening to it on audiobook because she's speaking it, so I can get the timbre of her voice and everything. And there was something really, really interesting that she said that I kind of jotted down in my notes. She said that she didn't want to be number one. She wanted to be number four or five, because number one, there was maybe a little bit too much pressure. And also with number four or five, she found that she could just be and just kind of exist. And then the people that maybe were number one could potentially take her songs and get that out there. And she just really enjoys the fact that here, I'm going to write a song, it's going to be what it's going to be, and then people say Aretha Franklin can make it into this epic song, I'm talking about Natural Woman, that maybe she would never have been able to do, or she maybe never would have thought she would have been able to do that, But just seeing her enjoy other people take her song and put it out there is just so beautiful. I know I'm going to keep saying that, pun intended.
Well, no, you know, how true, not only for people like Aretha Franklin to take her songs. And I think about that performance. I think it was the Kennedy Center Honors.
Yes.
Maybe one of the most moving performances I've ever seen of anybody ever. Aretha Franklin coming on stage in a big old mink coat, and she brought her purse with.
Yes, I was just going to say, I was going to say the purse.
Because performers of that age didn't leave their valuable stuff backstage. They kept it with them. She came on stage. Put her purse on the piano and sat down and sang "You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman." And it was Aretha singing the song, but it was the reaction of Carole King that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That joy of seeing somebody else performing one of her songs and, you know, maybe the greatest performance ever of that song. But the other songs from the 50s and 60s, that you never even knew that Carole King wrote or had anything to do with, that are also performed during the show as well. Do you have favorite moments, favorite songs, favorite?
It's such a hard question. Well, because I feel like whenever I answer this question, I find myself saying, oh, well, I love Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. But you know what? Singing Beautiful is great. And I love It's Too. And then I just basically I enjoy singing the whole show.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all just so special. And
are there songs that are more challenging to sing?
Oh, yeah. But it's so funny. I was just talking about this. I think what's, again, something that's really been refreshing with this show is it's kind of taken me out of musical theater land, in the sense of I've given myself permission, because I feel like Carole, we're on a first name basis. No, I'm kidding. I don't even know.
Have you ever met her?
No, but I'm going to put that out there. We're manifesting that as we speak.
Let's bring her in right now.
Let's bring her in.
Carole King, welcome to the show.
Well, so I just think something that's really, she sings from her gut. She sings from her core, from her soul. And with that comes however she's feeling on a daily basis. And because of that, I feel like I've been able to take that essence, if you will, and give myself permission to feel however I am going to feel. And so maybe I won't do the same riff here, or, you know, I won't sing it exactly the same way because she didn't really. And kind of going back to, I think, to honoring her, I think something that our production does really well is, again, we honor her in the sense of there are moments in the show when you see us in the recording studio, and I've really tried to, if you close your eyes and listen, hopefully it will resemble the essence of what you hear on the album. Like, that's not necessarily the time to put any kind of, you know, me-isms, if you will, or just kind of spice it up, because, no, I think we're in the recording studio, and I think that should be respected about what we hear. I mean, I'm biased, but I do think that that album is one of the best of all time. You know, she was recording when Joni Mitchell was recording. Yeah. That they, when she was recording Blue, they were recording at the same time. It's just unreal. But then also when she's live, I mean, the amount of times that I've watched different live videos, I've never had the luxury of seeing her live. But she does all these cool things. Like, she does this part in It's Too Late, which I love because I feel like I do this anyway. She kind of mimes the guitar riff and she's like, wow, wow. She just appreciates and respects the music so much. And so it's fun to respect that from a sense of being live, from a sense of being in a recording
studio.
It's got
to be the songwriter in her, don't you think? That,
yeah, absolutely.
Where she hears different layers that most people don't hear.
Well, and even now, like the fact that I feel like I'm listening to, I mean, again, I grew up listening to this music. I actually have family that used to live in Oak Park, and I'm from Baltimore, and my mom, my brother, my family, we would all drive from Maryland to Oak Park, which is like a 12-hour.
That's a pretty long drive.
It's a pretty long drive. Yep. And when I was in the front seat, I wanted to listen to whatever my mom wanted to listen to. And you best believe it was Tapestry. It was James Taylor. It was John Denver. So, like, that's my music.
Yeah.
And we would sing. But now that I'm listening to it from a perspective of actually trying to embody her spirit, I'm hearing the music from the piano perspective, and it's really cool. I'm just like, you are so smart. Like, you're good, you, is what I keep thinking, because there were moments when our musical director, Carolyn Brady, she was like, Sam, you're doing a great job, but I do have to say some of the parts that you're playing on the piano are actually not the piano. They're like the guitar, or there are other instruments, but it's in my soul. It's in my, it's in my bones.
Well, that music is the original version is ingrained in you. Why wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
We're going to hear Samantha's version of one of those songs when we come back. We'll talk more about Beautiful, the Carole King musical, which is at the Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace now until... You probably know this better than I do.
March 23rd.
March 23rd is what I can say. And we'll give you information on how to get tickets with us this morning. Samantha Gershman, Carole King at Drury Lane in Oakbrook. And we'll be back after this. That amazing Kennedy Center performance. Aretha Franklin at the piano with her fur coat down on the floor. Throws it on the floor like a rag. Carries her purse. I love her so much. The great Carole King song, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, that we were just talking about a few minutes ago. Samantha Gershman is here. She plays Carole King in Beautiful, the Carole King musical that's at the Drury Lane in Oakbrook Terrace. How about that Drury Lane theater that you're performing? That's a lovely little spot, isn't it?
It's great.
Wonderful little venue.
Yes, I love it. I was supposed to work there pre-pandemic for Evita, and obviously we know what happened, and then I booked something else, and it feels very full circle because I was like, well, no, I really wanted to work there, and I just couldn't because I went on tour. And all that being said, I'm happy
you're
to
back.
Be back.
You're back, and at the most wonderful time in Chicago when it's bitter cold outside.
But I just got a new coat.
Oh, see?
And it's keeping me very warm.
Yeah. Do you bring it on stage and throw it on the floor like Aretha?
You know, I should. I will.
In honor of Aretha.
In honor of Aretha, I'm bringing the coat on stage.
We are so lucky to get Sam to sing a song for us this morning live. Because who doesn't like to sing at this hour of the morning? You're going to do It's Too Late? Is that right?
Yeah.
Anything we need to know leading into this?
I don't think. I think that she did actually write these lyrics. A lot of the songs that we know Carole King for, her husband or her ex-husband, Jerry Goffin, wrote a lot of the lyrics. And it's crazy. It feels like it's coming from her. But it came from him, which I think is really telling in a beautiful way. But this one, she wrote. So I think that's just something to keep in mind. It's really groovy.
It's Too Late. Samantha Gershman as Carole King from Beautiful, the Carole King musical at the Drury Lane Oakbrook Terrace. Listen to you. That is so fantastic. Thank you so much.
It warms the soul.
It does warm the soul. And your voice is perfect and beautiful.
You.
And I can't thank you enough for getting up early and singing at this hour.
My pleasure.
So all we have to do now is figure out what you're going to cook when you
come
on the
just
TV
going
show.
Through. Mac and cheese, burgers, brisket. We've already crossed out brisket.
Yeah. Well, we'll work it out.
Think about it.
Can I share a couple of texts that have come in on our text line?
Oh, yes, please.
773 area code. What a lovely guest Samantha is.
Aww.
Isn't that nice?
I paid them to say that.
That's okay. It doesn't matter. 708 area code. I saw the show last night. It was wonderful.
Aw.
Yeah. 815. I'm putting my Carole King Tapestry album on my turntable.
Yes.
What's a turntable?
Do it.
As we speak, you've inspired them to listen to their Carole King music.
Good.
If you are inspired, though, get some tickets to see Beautiful, the Carole King musical at the Drury Lane Theater in Oak Brook Terrace. Tickets available at 630-530-0111 or online at drurylanetheater.com. And you, too, will be treated to the very, very entertaining and delightful Samantha Gershman. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you. If I could say one last thing.
Yes.
Just something that hits home for me, and I'd love to share it with your listeners and you, is that there's this line that she says in the show, and she also mentions it in her book. She says her mom is telling her that she should teach, and she goes, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be a songwriter. When I hear a good song, I feel like someone understands me. Even if I'm all alone, it's like I've got a friend in the room. I want to do that for people. And, yeah, I just want everyone to come groove and move in their seats and feel like they've got a friend in the room.
Love that. Samantha, thank you so much for coming by. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. How delightful was our last guest?
Terrific. Terrific.
Didn't she sound good?
Yeah, sounded great. I love the show anyway. We saw the show Christmas of 2023, and it was wonderful.
Well, you're due to see it again.
Beautiful. Then. Well, I'll say it's beautiful.
Well, that's the name of the show.
Oh, how about that?
Who ever thought that such a connection could be made?
How about that?
At the Drury Lane, Oak Brook Terrace. And that's till, why could I never find the dates on here? Oh, here, March 23rd. It's playing till March 23rd. Let's find a time to go.
Go see it again. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a wonderful show. And it's not just all music. It's about her life and the ups and downs of her life. Yeah, it's a great, great thing.
So I'm told, you know, last week we had Jesse Mueller on the show. Who originated the role Carole King in Beautiful on Broadway, and she won a Tony Award for it. And Jesse was on the show last week with Seth Rudetsky, and you know they do like these special one night things, and they did a show at the Studebaker Theater last night, which I heard I wasn't there because I've been traveling this week and I'm just completely wiped out from that. But I wasn't there, but I'm told that they played, you know, she talked about WGN and she always wanted to play the grand prize game, that they created the six buckets for her. And while she was singing a song from Carousel, she was playing the grand prize game.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
I love that. Okay. So anyhow, I'm going to tell you where I was traveling this week. We've got some great interviews, and we're going to share some of those. And what is tomorrow, Shawnee? What is the big day tomorrow? Why people will be off work, and you probably won't be able to go to a bank and so forth.
President's Day.
That's right. We celebrate President's Day. All coming up in just a moment, please. So many people on our text line saying, after listening to that last segment, with Samantha playing Carole King in Beautiful, the Carole King musical at the Drury Lane Oak Brook, that they went and got their Tapestry albums out. And they're playing their Tapestry albums this morning. So that's what I thought I would do as well.
Me too.
I wish I had my vinyl.
See?
I had the original album. I had the original vinyl.
No. I made a mistake in the late 1980s, early 90s, when everything was starting to come out on CD, and we were all excited about, you know, the no noise and
what's
everything.
A CD? What's a CD?
Yeah, now everybody asking, what's a CD? Compact disc. I did get rid of some vinyl. Not all of it, but some, I won't go back now, and I go, wow.
Foolishly got rid of all of mine.
Yeah.
Got tired of moving them around.
Well, there is that.
In the milk crates. Remember you go steal a milk crate from someplace?
Yeah. Because
they fit your albums perfectly.
They would fit right in. Sure. Yeah. Sure.
But the, that Tapestry album. Holy smokes. I was just looking at all the songs that are on that album. Smack Water Jack is the one that we just played. I love that song. I Feel the Earth Move. It's Too Late. You've Got a Friend. Beautiful. Song Tapestry. So Far Away.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Home Again. I don't remember Home Again. I'm sure if I heard it, I would remember because I used to play it over and over and over. Way Over Yonder. Where You Lead. Where You Lead, I Will Follow. You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. Will You Still Love Her version of Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow? The song that she wrote for the Shirelles. What's the Shirelles? that's an amazing. Her version of that song gives me goosebumps.
I like her version of One Fine Day also.
I like her version of One Fine Day.
Yeah.
She wrote for.
Oh.
I can't believe you can't remember this.
I should.
The Chiffons.
The Chiffons. Okay. Sure.
I'm going to cry. I love this song so much.
Tonight you're mine.
Listen to her voice.
Completely.
I have to turn it off. I'm going to, literally, I'm.
You're going to lose it.
Well, that and we'd have to pay full rights.
that also.
I was just thinking about the budget of the show.
Mm-hmm.
There's the reality of the deal. Oh, man, the Tapestry album. Fantastic. 1971. My Tapestry album. Here's how I remember my Tapestry album. I was playing my Tapestry album while I was painting my bedroom.
Oh, okay.
And I set the paint can down. I don't know what I was doing. Something. And it dripped paint all over the front of the album cover.
Oh. That's why you got rid of it.
As I'm envisioning that album cover, there's a big paint ring on it.
On the front of the...
Yeah. And that's why I don't do the Mr. Fix-It show anymore. Oh, look at this. The album was released February 10th. Like within a week.
54 years ago or something.
How about that? Wow, you were old then.
You were older.
You were old now.
But you were older. Andy's the young, voice.
Are you age-shaming me?
I think it sounded like he was.
I'm just saying.
Do I have to call HR on you again?
I'm just saying. I did not reveal any numbers.
I keep HR on speed dial in here. just in case.
I did not reveal any numbers.
I am older than you.
Sorry. Yes, you are.
Sorry.
Several years, too.
What's that number of HR? Happy President's Day tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you. Same to you, Dean.
Thank you.
Didn't this just used to be Washington's birthday? And
well, it was Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday.
Lincoln's birthday was the 12th, right?
Yes.
And Washington's the 22nd.
Yes. And they just thought, well, let's combine both of them.
Let's make it a combo.
We were honoring them, and we'll just call it President's Day.
Yeah.
So that's what they did.
Yeah.
And now you know the rest of the story.
Did you know, here's a little presidential trivia that you can drop in sometime tomorrow. Martin Van Buren, the 8th president, is credited with creating the expression, okay.
Is that right?
You know how you go, how you doing? Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. That was Martin. We can thank Martin Van Buren for that.
Okay.
And for the Van Buren boys.
And he was... He was from Kinderhook, New York, and during his campaign, old Kinderhook clubs were formed to support the president, known as OK.
Ah, so that's where it comes
old
from.
Old Kinderhook.
Mm-hmm. OLD and then Kinderhook.
Yeah.
Right.
Teddy Roosevelt was the first president to ride in a car.
That makes sense, yes.
How about that?
Yep. 1906 or aught 7?
Yeah, I don't have what aught.
It was aught.
I don't have what aught that was.
You don't know which aught.
You ought to know. Come on.
Oh!
I was waiting for somebody to say it. His cousin, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was the first to ride in an airplane.
That's, I knew, yeah.
First president to ride in an airplane.
Right, right.
The 18th president of the United States, do you know who that was?
That would have been Ulysses S. Grant.
Wow. I'm not amazed that you know that. You're a history savant.
Not really.
I would have never known that in a million years.
Me neither.
18th President Ulysses S. Grant was given a $20 speeding ticket for riding his horse. Riding his horse and buggy too fast down a street in Washington, D.C. The White House's
Mr. First, President? Step out of the buggy, please.
I need license and registration, please. The White House's first website went online October 1994 during whose administration? Mr. I Know My Presidents.
That would have been Bill Clinton.
That would have been Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah.
First website. Hate to think.
That's when you typed in HTTP.
That's right.
And everything else.
Oh, you had to know your WWW.
And it was a W, World Wide Web.
Yeah.
It wasn't just the web or online.
The only president who studied to be a medical doctor?
Woodrow Wilson?
William Henry Harrison.
Oh, William Henry Harrison. Okay.
The 9th president.
Shortest term in office, too.
Was he the one that died, like, within a month?
A month, yeah.
Got pneumonia?
Yeah, the inaugural speech went for 3 hours. He caught a cold. It developed into pneumonia, yeah. And he was dead.
Didn't he? Wow.
That was it.
You're pretty matter of fact. And bang, he was dead. Isn't it because he refused to wear a hat or coat during the speech?
Yes, that was part of it. And it was just, you know, everything was there at the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah. And the man passed away.
He
yes.
Did. Yes. Millard Fillmore was the 13th president. And he was the first to have a stepmother. Who found that out?
I don't know.
Who looked that up? Let me see. Who was the first president ever to have a stepmother? Oh, I like this one. The first left-handed president. So I'm left-handed.
Yeah, it wasn't George Bush.
I'm a southpaw. Not Barack Obama. He was famously left-handed.
Right, right.
No, left.
Correct.
James Buchanan.
Incorrect.
Okay.
James Garfield.
Garfield was left-handed.
Yeah.
Another short-term president.
Was he?
Yes. He took office and was assassinated only a few months later in 1881.
I didn't know that he was assassinated.
He was. Shot at the train station in Washington, D.C.
What the heck?
Yes. The second president assassinated.
After Lincoln. Lincoln, 6'4", tallest president. I guess you are the history genius on the show. So
yeah, I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to presidents. So.
When it comes to presidents,
and
no, good for you that you know that. I don't know why I thought it was somebody else who was assassinated.
William McKinley.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It was only 20 years later.
Jeez. Boy, we're assassination crazy in this country.
So, yeah, that was 1901, and that's how Theodore Roosevelt became president.
Wish I had something funny to end this
add to this,
with
yeah.
Right now. There are really not too many paths you can go down when you go down the assassination path.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, what else can I tell you? What else would you like to know about President's Day?
Oh, I don't know. What do you know?
Harry Truman was a haberdasher before he got into politics.
Yes.
Do you even know what a haberdasher
is? He was a clothier. He ran a clothing store with a gentleman named Eddie Jacobson.
What?
Yeah.
What are you cheating on something?
No, I'm not. I told you.
Andy looked like he's got to have cheating.
Andy, come over here.
He doesn't have anything up other than the newscast.
There you go.
Wow, you're a genius.
Independence, Missouri. Or do you say Missouri?
I take back everything I've ever said about you.
About you. So I'm not the Mel Cooley of the show anymore.
If we have time. I take back. Previous jobs. Abe Lincoln, of course, once split rails for fences. Jimmy Carter was a peanut farmer. Ronald Reagan, an actor. Andrew Johnson. Isn't he the guy that succeeded Lincoln when he was shot?
Yes. Right? Yes.
See, I know something, too. Andrew Johnson was a tailor. Before he became president.
The first to be impeached.
And Harry Truman was a haberdasher.
Boy, whenever you
who
say,
uses that word anymore, right?
Whenever you say Harry Truman, I start thinking Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray.
Right.
We didn't start the fire.
Right. Billy Joel had to come up with that from someplace.
Well, how about the Chicago song? America needs you, Harry Truman.
Right.
You remember that one, Dean.
I do. Yes, I do. I'm still getting over President possibly checking my inseam. That's a little... Get into our Dean's List A-List interview for today. And these are some interviews that I did just this past week in London. I was there for the world premiere of the new movie that's called Mickey 17. It's the latest movie from Oscar-winning director Bong Chi-yu, who gave us the film Parasite, which was that really, really quirky, like, home invasion drama. He's a very, very inventive director, and this latest film that he's got is a science fiction comedy that stars Robert Pattinson of the Batman fame, of Twilight, I guess, is where he first became a household name. We talked with him briefly on the red carpet, and we'll share that with you coming up in a couple of minutes. Tomorrow morning, I wanted to remind you, on our WGN-TV morning news, we'll be sharing some of these interviews so you can see these people that you're going to hear in a few minutes. But also, we'll have all the highlights from the Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary special that's going to be on tonight. It's a three-hour show. It's a lot to take in. I'll recap it all, share the highlights with you tomorrow morning. Welcome to our little Sunday morning soiree. Thank you for all the nice texts that you send in. We really appreciate it. 312-981-7200. If you've got a question, if you've got a comment, you can also use that same number if you want to old school, go old school and actually call in. 312-981-7200. Coming up, we'll get into our A-list interviews for this morning. Talking about new movies, though, we have a brand new number one movie at the box office, and that would be Captain America, Brave New World. So far has taken in $100 million. Now, they will include Monday's box office receipts also in there. because it's President's Day tomorrow, so they're going to consider it a holiday. But the new Captain America movie, everyone was kind of curious how it was going to do with Anthony Mackie now getting behind the shield as the new Captain America. Jack, I'm going to change the order of these. Let's take the Carl Laemmle interview next because it kind of ties in with this. Veteran actor Carl Laemmle is, he's been in so many movies and so many television shows. He is best known probably for playing Marvel's forgotten super soldier, Isaiah Bradley, who they bring back. He reprises the role of Isaiah Bradley in this new Captain America movie. And we were lucky enough to spend some time with him on a Zoom chat lately. And he had a lot of really interesting things to say.
His character is full of lore in the Marvel world as Isaiah Bradley to be considered to be the first black Captain America. Carl Laemmle is reprising his role in the upcoming new movie, Captain America, Brave New World. And he joins us now. Good morning. It's very nice to see you.
Very good to see you, Dean.
So what was it like, being back in the action again? With one of Marvel's most beloved characters.
It was wonderful. It was Isaiah Bradley has been a gift to me. I'm not a comic book person. I didn't know about him. I didn't know about his existence. I didn't know about the series Truth that Marvel wrote. And I'm just very, very proud to be a part of it because I think it tells a story and allows an opening into a series of truths about the way things have worked in this country as it continues to work toward its ideals. Isaiah was someone who believed in those ideals, who wanted to champion them, who believed that he and people who looked like him were not being given their full due, that their love was not being recognized or respected, and that participating in the battle for democracy would be something that would change the story.
And I know you can't give us any secrets, but can you tell us what it was like interacting with Anthony Mackie, who now steps up behind the shield?
Working with Anthony Mackie has always been a joy for me. I think he's a supremely talented individual. I think he's a quite good person, and that's important, for me. I've had to be in situations sometimes with people who I didn't particularly care for. Anthony is not the case. I believe his work and his presence, not just in this film, but in this industry, is something that I've always appreciated. And I think that as he moves forward, we see even more of him, I look forward to even greater things than Captain America.
Is it intimidating in any way when you work with somebody like Harrison Ford, who has done so much, part of the Star Wars legacy, part of the Indiana Jones legacy? It's been my experience that these guys work extra hard at putting their fellow actors at ease and making them comfortable. Was that the case here?
I felt that way. I'm not sure that he's working that hard at it. I think he's being himself. And I think when you're being yourself and genuinely bringing yourself to people, that's what you get. I didn't feel intimidated, and I rarely feel intimidated. I usually feel a connection, or I don't. But I think the idea of being intimidated takes away from what I think is the key element in what we do, which is it's a collaborative effort. And I think Harrison and people like him understand that it would be great. He can do the best work imaginable. And if we don't all show up and operate at the top of our intelligence, it won't be as good.
Friday, February 14th, Captain America, Brave New World. Carl, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, and happy Valentine's Day, Love Day, to everyone out there. Enjoy the film.
There you go. Carl Lumley, nice conversation we had with him the other day about his role in Captain America that is in theaters now and is going crazy at the box office. So far, $100 million for the weekend, and certainly we'll continue to add on to that today and also tomorrow, holiday. As well. So it's definitely going to be the number one movie at the box office this weekend. This past week, I spent much of my time in beautiful London, England. We went over to attend the world premiere of a new movie that's called Mickey 17. That is really kind of a, I guess, sci-fi comedy is, if I had to put it in a cubbyhole somewhere, that's where I would put it. Because it sort of starts off as a science fiction movie and evolves not into a, you know, slapstick kind of comedy, but one with some very, very funny elements to it. Genres that you might not think belong together that are not a bit surprising when you consider the director of the film, Bong Joon-ho. He is the director that gave us the movie Parasite, which was not so much comedy, but had some funny elements to it for what normally would have been a very dramatic film. It had its lighter moments, and he's sort of famous for breaking genres, for really pushing the envelope. He not only directs this film, but he produced it, and he wrote it, and it, you know, he brought along some great stars along the way. Robert Pattinson, who you know from The Batman, who you know from the Twilight series of films. Also, Mark Ruffalo, a longtime film veteran, is part of this film, as is Toni Collette. And Stephen Ewan, who has a supporting role in this film, actor and comedian. As a matter of fact, with some Chicago background, as we learned. And also Naomi Ackie, who has been in lots of different movies. She starred as Whitney Houston in the biopic that came out a year or so ago. So these are all the... I went to the world premiere and, you know, spent a couple, 2-3 hours on the red carpet talking with a lot of the stars who were going by. And then also had an opportunity to sit down and talk with the stars one-on-one. We'll share the red carpet interviews with you when we come back from a break. It's my Dean's List A-List interviews for today, 11:45 on WGN. All right, 11:47 is the time. Been talking about the stage production of Waitress at Aurora's Paramount Theater. They're getting ready to put on their Chicago area premiere of this Tony-nominated musical on Broadway, the music of Sarah Bareilles, story of waitress Jenna looking to bake her way out of her troubles and find her happiness. We have got another one of our Dean's Night Out coming up to go see Waitress on February 23rd. You could be one of the 10 winners we take along to and give 2 tickets to that February 23rd performance. We'll have a nice little meet and greet before the show, so we'll get to chat a little bit and take some pictures and then go in and see Waitress out at the Paramount. Now, today's the final day that you can enter this contest. For the opportunity to win, you have to go to WGNradio.com/contests. WGNradio.com/contest. You'll have until 11:59 p.m. to enter to win tonight to join me out there for that. Or if you are caller number 10 right now, we'll give you a pair of tickets to go and see the show. Caller 10 will win a pair of tickets to see Waitress at the Paramount, 312-981-7200. But first, back to our A-List interview for today that takes you into the future and into the world of sci-fi.
This is Ground Control to Major Tom.
Now, the movie Mickey 17 takes place in space. I don't want to tell you too much about the story because I think part of the fun of this whole movie that is written by its director, Bong Joon-ho, is having it unfold and having the surprises come along the way. But I think it's spoiler-free enough to say that it takes place in space. It is about a group of Earthlings that are looking to colonize another planet, and they're trying to figure out if it's safe. They have the technology to regenerate the human body after it dies. The process that you go through for this is called being an expendable, and that's what Robert Pattinson's character is. He is an expendable, a disposable worker doing experiments to see if they are able to safely colonize this new planet. And it's very thought-provoking from a sci-fi standpoint, but it's also, a little bit comedic at the same time as his body is regenerated each time after he dies. You meet a lot of interesting people along the way. You meet the eccentric leaders of this group of colonizers who are willing to, risk everything, as long as it's not them, to experiment to see that if it's safe or not. So I think it's suffice to say things don't go exactly the way that they wanted them to go. I don't want to give you too many details about this because it will spoil the fun of it all. But that's the basic premise, and I think you get the idea. Things, as I say, don't go exactly right along the way. So we sat down and we did one-on-one interviews with much of the cast in London the past couple of days. We'll share those one-on-one interviews a little closer to when this movie opens, which will be March 7th, by the way, here in the U.S. But we did also spend some time on the world premiere red carpet for this movie, Mickey 17. And we talked with Robert Pattinson, among them, the star of the movie, about his collaboration with his very, very creative director, Bong Joon-ho.
I mean, to a degree, like, the script was pretty done when I met Bong, and he's extremely organized. I mean, he storyboards everything himself. The movie's basically done in his head to a certain degree before we even start shooting. But then as we went on, like, he's very open to kind of experimentation, and I ended up doing stuff which was just like crazy by the end of it. He was totally, yeah, he was game to try anything. He only shoots a storyboard, so you only ever shoot like two or three lines at a time, which means like you'd be like, can I just try it like this? And he's like, yeah, just do whatever you want. It's only two lines. This is kind of, I'm not even entirely sure if it's supposed to be a comedy. I just kind of decided.
This crowd is like screaming for you like crazy. I remember when Twilight came out and talking to you and the screaming like I've never heard. How does this compare? Do you ever get used to that?
I mean, it's interesting. It's guys. It's all guys. it's kind of shocking. Ever since Batman, it's just like, it's a total gender switch, which is kind of funny. Yeah, it's cool, though.
Yeah, there you go. Robert Pattinson on the red carpet talking about his movie Mickey 17, his collaboration with director Bong Joon-ho, and remembering the crowds. I tell you what, when the movie Twilight came out, when was that? Early 2000s, I think. Maybe 2005, 6, 7, somewhere around then. Must have been a little later than that. Maybe 2006, 2007, somewhere in that neighborhood. He and Taylor Lautner, who was in Twilight, and Kristen Stewart, you know, all unknowns at that time, were making the rounds, going from city to city, making appearances. The teenage girls especially were fascinated by this vampire romantic drama that was being adapted onto the big screen. And they did appearances around the Chicago area. One that I remember in particular was at the Fox Valley Shopping Center in Aurora. Pretty sure it was Fox Valley. And, you know, we were there covering it. And I don't think I have ever heard louder, more ear-piercing screaming than I did for Robert Pattinson by the young girls who had come out in the thousands at Fox Valley to see them, and Robert Pattinson in particular. And I remember him just being so tickled by the whole thing because, you know, this really sort of put him on the map. He had never gone through anything like this prior to this. And now here we are on a red carpet again, this time in the West End of London, and with this new movie coming out. One of its co-stars, also, I talked with almost everybody on the red carpet, but one in particular that I found especially interesting was actor-comedian Steven Yeun. He has been in lots of different movies, but as I discovered from him, he also spent several years here in Chicago. The city of Chicago has a pretty great significance for him, as he told us about remembering as we stood out in the cold in London that night on the red carpet, talking about his new movie and him reminiscing about Chicago.
Are you flashing back on your Chicago days right now, being out in the cold?
Chicago wasn't as dry as this, I feel like. Yeah. Or, right? We got lake effect. Yeah. I love Chicago.
Where did you live when you were there? And what did I mean? You were at Second City, but so, like, where did you hang out? Where did you go? What do you remember?
I hung out in all weird, different places. When I first moved, I moved to Old Town, about a block and a half away from Second City, and then I made my way up to Lakeview. And then lived a little bit in, like, Wrigleyville-ish area. Yeah. And then I moved up to Lincoln Square, and I met my wife there. I just trolled around and tried to do comedy.
Yeah, do you remember a favorite food or restaurant that you used to hang out at?
Yeah, you know, I'm blanking on its name now, but those pork chop sandwiches with the two next to each other, what were they called? I don't remember. You know those two? Not only the pork chop sandwiches. The
Italian beef sandwich.
It wasn't Italian beef. It was like a Polish. I'm blanking on their names, but they have like competing. They're competing, and they both say that they were first. That's a great place.
Yeah, I don't even remember what he was talking about either. It sounds like he might have been talking about some Maxwell Street Polish sausage joints that have been there forever, but I can't think of two that were right next door to each other, each claiming to be the very first. I remember the original Jim's was a Maxwell Street favorite for, you know, Polish sausage, and, you know, I don't remember, I don't honestly don't even remember a place, you know, that specialized in pork chop sandwiches. I don't know. I know my food places pretty well, but I have no idea what he's talking about. Maybe some of you remember the sandwich places that Steven Yeun is referring to, but isn't that funny? And this is almost always the case. I did sort of specifically ask him about favorite places to eat, but for most everybody, many of their Chicago memories are steeped in food, whether it's hot dogs or ribs or pizza. Here's a Polish sausage reminiscence right now. I thought for sure he was referring to the Italian beef because it's so popular with the bear right now. Maybe somebody will remember and they will call us up. Anyway, this new movie is called Mickey 17. It opens on March 7th in the Chicago area. We've got sit down, nice and quiet, nice and warm, one-on-one interviews that we did in London last week. We'll share those with you leading up to the March 7th opening of that film. And coming up in our next hour, we'll get into our Food Time segment. So we got a lot of texts regarding the guest that we had, Stephen Ewan, the actor-comedian who I talked to in London, who was remembering living in Chicago and a favorite place that he used to go to eat. He couldn't remember the name of it, but they had pork chop sandwiches and Polish sausage. There were two places right next door to each other, each claiming to be the first to sell those, the Polish sausage. And I couldn't think of who it was. I was just...
Well, I heard you mentioning Maxwell Street.
Well, I mentioned the original Jim's on Maxwell Street, because that's what I remember. And, you know, Polish sausage, I think, original Jim's on Maxwell, which is no longer on Maxwell Street, right? Didn't they move all that stuff when they...
When they redid all of Halstead and everything else when UIC was there.
It's like on Desplaines Avenue or something now. I'm not sure where it is. But a lot of people did text in saying that it was Jim's, because they did sell Polish and they did sell pork chop sandwiches. And there were two places right next to. A lot of people remembered that both claimed to be the first and like that.
Okay, so Jim's.
Yeah.
Original Jim's.
You okay in there? It sounds like the equipment's falling apart.
Yeah, it's...
You okay? You doing
I'm
some,
fine.
You doing some homework?
I'm...
You trying to fill in for Lou Manfredini in there?
What's Mr. Fix-It, right?
Mr. Break-It.
Mr. Break-It is the correct bet. Cold day in Chicago. Gonna get colder. As you've been hearing Schwani talk about. How cold's it gonna get tonight?
A total of 1 degree for a low, and Joyce was talking about sub-zero wind chills for tonight, tomorrow, into Tuesday. It's going to be rough out there.
Thank you for saying 1 degree.
1 degree.
I have a pet peeve for weather people, or even reporters that are, you know, they're standing.
They say degrees?
Yes.
1 degrees?
It's 1 degree.
They'll go, it's going to be 0 degrees.
No, it's just zero.
It's just zero.
Zero is not a number.
I've heard 1 degrees.
By the way, the time is 12:11, 11 minutes after 12 o'clock.
What are you talking?
Just wanted you... That was another one of your pet peeves.
Where did that come from?
What are you talking about?
Well, that's another one of your... I'm just trying to see if you were paying attention.
He's covering time and temperature today.
Yeah. You're going to see one degree. You're going to see a lot of reporters standing on expressway overpasses over the next couple of days. And the wind chill is 0 degrees.
It's just zero.
Back to you.
In the warm studio.
In the warm. Ooh, I hope you're keeping warm out there.
Bundle up.
That's my anchor pet peeve. Well, I hope you're keeping warm out there. Yeah, easy for you to say in the nice warm studio.
Well, under the lights in the studio.
Right. Right. You're complaining that it's too hot in the studio and these poor mopes are standing out there in their parkas.
Poor mopes.
Oh, TV. Schwani, I had a question about one of the stories that you had in your newscast about music making...
I knew you were going to ask about this.
Music making...
That's why
work.
I put it in there.
I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, you got to give me something to pay attention to. I can't listen to all the depressing news that's going on right now. I need a little something to cheer me up once in a while.
Okay.
So what's the deal with this now? What are you saying? That music...
It's a study.
Makes your...
Music made for workflow. In other words, you're at the office, you're going about your work at your desk,
and your colleagues
and so forth.
Yes.
Music made for workflow on streaming platforms helped people think faster and feel better.
Any kind of music?
Well, workflow music, probably what you prefer. The music that you would prefer,
So you're saying that if you, like a lot of offices don't want music playing, They think it's distracting.
Then wear the earbuds.
What you're saying is that music actually adds to productivity.
Right. 76% of workflow listeners showed improved mood and got progressively faster at the task, whatever they were doing, while maintaining accuracy compared to other things like attention-grabbing pop music, you know, louder upbeat stuff, or distracting office noise. Workflow music on streaming platforms.
Oh, wait. What if pop music is my workflow music?
That could be your workflow music.
How do you define workflow music?
Well, this is on streaming platforms that was determined to be workflow.
Well, it would be any kind.
It could be anything, yeah. I mean, bottom line is,
I like to play music from my 8-tracks while I'm working.
Uncle Dean, what's an 8-track?
And then you take your breaks when it goes from one channel to the next.
That's how I know when to go for a coffee break.
Exactly.
That's
when it fades out. Put it in pause.
Yeah, that's
when
I know.
And then come back with your coffee.
When I can go stand around the water cooler. Do people still do that, stand around the water cooler?
I don't think we have a water cooler.
I don't
cooler.
Think we have.
We have a water thing in our refrigerator.
That's true.
Well, then they stand around the water thing at the refrigerator.
Yeah,
then.
I just went and hydrated. I call it the WGN trough. I sit there and drink water like a horse. So what would be your work? So basically the story is music that you like makes you more productive.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't distract you.
Right.
Is that
right.
what I'm gathering
That's,
from this?
Right. That's what I would gather from this study also.
All
yes.
Right. All right.
Music that you prefer and like that, you know, motivates you to get things done.
Be more
is
productive.
What it says here. Improved mood. Well,
wow.
Now you're inspired to do what you need to do.
Can the moods be any better than they are on this show, really?
Oh, we're always in the best frame of mind.
Yeah. We are the workflow soundtrack.
We are your workflow soundtrack. Yeah, for some reason, we got quite a few texts today of people saying how much they enjoyed the show. Do you think people are just leftover drunk from Valentine's Day and they're drunk texting us?
They just don't want to go outside. It's too cold.
Well, all these people that made reservations for Valentine's Day in Skokie and Evanston.
Oh, isn't that sad?
All the places where everything is still shut down, right? Did you say that there are still... Boil orders
in place until at least tonight in Skokie. They are making headway with the cleanup and repairing the break.
Right.
But the big thing now is that the water samples that they're taking, and they had to make sure the water pressure was at a level where they could do this testing. If the samples don't come back at an expected level of cleanliness, then they have to continue to wait until they do.
Yeah. I feel bad. I feel bad for everybody involved. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Not having water is horrible.
But it happened to a building right next to mine. In fact, here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that. But like all these people that made Valentine's Day reservations at restaurants.
Yeah, the restaurants couldn't serve them.
It was hard. It's hard to get a Valentine's Day reservation. Period. But now, you snag one. And then the restaurant's closed. Yep. The whole village is closed. It's not just the restaurant. Everything is. The people that, you know, they had to make other plans. Although I did get, I think I'm going to start celebrating Valentine's Day on the 15th or 16th.
Because you get the less expensive candy?
I did notice in the store everything was half price.
Goes right along with your Easter joke.
And if I'm one thing, it's a cheapskate. So,
boy, that's for sure.
Wow. So much for you getting half price a box full of candy for me. Everything was like flowers that were, well, everything, flowers, candy, everything I noticed at the Jewels, half price.
Yeah. Wilted flowers, day-old flowers.
Happy Valentine's Day. This is what I think of you. All right, so back to the music. The workplace. What's it called? Workplace music?
Workflow.
Workflow music.
Workflow.
According to the text line.
Workflow. Music made for workflow on streaming platforms, whatever platforms you may use. You can go to a work floor mode, I guess, on
what's
this.
A streaming platform, Uncle D?
630 area code says it's music mainly with beats and no lyrics.
Okay, so it has a steady rhythm.
Oh, well, that's beautiful
music. Instrumental music.
Let's see here. Got a lot of quite a few texts on this. Workflow music is lo-fi music. Oh, I don't know what that means. What does that mean, lo-fi music?
Low-level, laid-back music.
Lo-fi?
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, they'll text in again and explain.
Producer Jack, what would be your workflow music? What would be music that you would listen to that would make you... It's hard to believe that you could be even more productive than you already are. But what would you consider...
He's the one that makes the show happen.
He's nothing happens. Nothing comes out of your speakers, ladies and gentlemen, unless Jack Hammer says.
Jack Hammer takes care of it.
Yeah. We're just monkeys.
We're
like little marionettes. We're like a Jack's
dance, marionettes.
Yeah, exactly. So what's your lo-fi music? Or whatever it's called, workflow or whatever.
Lo-fi. Well, I mean, if I listen to something else that I can't hear what's going on here. If anything, I mean, sometimes when I work out, I listen to country music.
Country music. Like what would be a song, say?
Anything Luke Combs.
Luke Combs. I like that. Didn't he do the Fast Car? Wasn't that?
Yeah, he did it.
The Tracy Chapman song. Mm-hmm. I do love that song.
Banger.
I'd be more productive if I was listening to that.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely would. Andy?
Well, there'd be...
Doing this by age.
There would be... there would only be two soundtracks that I would use, and one would be completely all 80s.
Yeah.
Anything bubblegum pop
you
from
like
the 80s.
You like the yacht rock,
and
don't
I
you?
Was going to say the second one would be all the yacht rock.
Yeah. So you'd be like all Michael McDonald?
Well, keep forgetting, you know, a little What a Fool Believes. Sure. A little River Band, maybe. Mm-hmm. Throw some Kenny Loggins in there.
What's Yacht Rock?
So you have to watch the documentary.
What's for Yacht Rock?
You've got to watch the documentary on Max for the complete explanation. But it's the genre of music that it's like, soft rock from the late 70s and early 80s.
Yeah.
Christopher Cross,
okay.
Kenny Loggins.
Yeah, right now he's going, who's Christopher Cross?
Yeah, so it was
Ride Like the Wind. Does that mean anything?
Ride Like the Wind, a little Sailing.
Sailing, yeah. Oh, that is quintessential yacht rock there.
Takes me away.
It's so interesting. If you haven't seen that documentary and you are interested, I mean, I'm just kind of an aside here, that they explain where the genre actually was named, and it was not named by the music people. It was named by a comedy crew.
I got news for you. Jack fell asleep
minutes ago. Well, I was talking to everybody else.
Jack's snoring in the control.
Jack's turning my microphone off.
Schwani?
Okay, I'm going to be really out of the ordinary here. Mm-hmm. I think you know where I'm gravitating.
How unusual.
I was thinking about this when you started to ask the question. And first of all, Andy, certainly all of those tracks would be really great to listen to. Oh, but yeah. For me, Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. Miles Davis from the late 1950s and early 1960s. Mm-hmm. The Kind of Blue album, of course, things like that. The other album, Someday My Prince Will Come.
That's good. I was listening to that the other day.
Were you?
I was.
Who's on it?
I don't know. I didn't read the album notes, but I was enjoying. I was just enjoying the music. I was just enjoying it. I was like, oh, that's Miles Davis. I remember that from my smooth jazz days when they would occasionally let me play
Miles Davis.
Let me play an interesting song when they we could take a moment away from Kenny G and play some actual jazz.
Zing.
Miles Davis, that's a good choice.
Thank you.
Because that would take you someplace, right?
Yes.
And then suddenly you're
And here's a pianist that, you know, jazz aficionados still to this day just really worship this man's artistry. And he may not be known to everybody, but in the 50s and the 1960s, the 70s, Bill Evans. Do you know Bill Evans?
I do, yeah.
Okay, he's another one I would pick with
that. Guitarist, is that right?
Pianist.
It's pianist.
Okay. Yeah. And you like Tony Bennett?
I love Tony Bennett.
Then you must check out an album that's simply called the Bill Evans Tony Bennett album. Mm. It's just the two of them.
Oh my gosh.
You won't forget it.
Wow. You know who I like? Thanks for asking.
Well, yeah, but you said you were going by age.
Well, we're done
so,
with you, right?
Yes. So, okay, so what I'm does nice. That mean?
I'm the oldest one. It's a badge of honor.
It is.
Look how much I've survived.
Yes. What would be your
picks? That should be my workflow song. I will survive.
I'm interested in this now.
I've known Dave Schwann for over 30 years.
40 years.
I will survive as long as I know. Oh, no.
It's 40 years.
Oh.
You can jump into my genre, too, then do I'm Still Standing from Elton John.
Yeah. It's true. You know who I love is Joe Williams.
Oh, wow, sure.
Singer Joe Williams.
Chicago's own.
Give me a Dinah Washington.
Yes.
Give me an Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella, yes.
You just unleashed this whole jazz thing in my head with your Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
But who else do I like? I love Tracy Chapman, and I do love that the remake. A Fast Car.
Fast Car, yeah.
That's fantastic. We're talking about the Aretha Franklin version of You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. That song, literally, I get like a physiological response from that
song. Oh, it's beautiful, yeah.
I don't know if it would make me more productive, but if I'm like feeling stressed out or, you know, in a bad mood or sad or something, if I put that song on, it elevates me. Would that be considered?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. Improved mood, definitely. Yeah,
definitely.
This is what they're talking about.
We were talking about the Tapestry album all morning.
Mm-hmm.
Carole King's Tapestry album. If I put that on, I just go someplace else.
I think you mentioned
elevates me.
I think you mentioned during the interview Aretha's performance of A Natural Woman at the Kennedy Center honors.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. And Carole King was in tears.
It's stunning.
Yeah.
Stunning. And I just happen to have another song that brightens me up like crazy. I was just listening to it on my my iPod.
Not on your 8-track, but the iPod.
It's just as outdated. Yeah, you want to hear it?
On your Sony Walkman?
Yeah, on my Walkman. I just put my foam ear headphones on.
Oh, those are so fun.
Yeah, right? Well, it's worth it when you get songs like... that's nice, isn't it?
Give me
hope. Okay, that's enough of that.
Song of the year in 1977.
That was in my DJ days.
Yeah.
And it was in yours too, Dean.
Yeah, Pat Boone's
Daughter Debbie.
Daughter Debbie, man, you light up my life. All right. Do we have anything else?
Well, it's up to you.
I think we've redefined the phrase killing time.
Killing time.
Right now. Yes. And coming up, we'll get into our food time segment today because it's cold outside. See, I was listening to your weather forecast. I was paying attention. Because it's cold.
I'm sorry, what?
Never mind. I was.
Yes, I was saying it's getting cold out.
Never go back to doing your mortal or whatever you do during the show. Because it's cold outside.
I was trying to get my workflow music lined up.
You do that. You work on that. Coming up, well, because it's cold outside, we've got some comfort food recipes that'll be perfect for this Sunday, the next few days where it'll be super cold, including a soup that has got all the same ingredients as lasagna. 12:37. Time to eat. Welcome into Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show.
the award-winning All Things Edible program, heard every Sunday at this time. Just hearing our Food Glorious Food intro. I mentioned that I was doing some interviews in London this past week. Full musical staging of Oliver, from which the Food Glorious Food song comes. It's being staged in London right now. I didn't have time to go see it, but it's one of my favorite musicals of all time. But I digress. Oh, baby, it's cold outside. And gonna be cold for the next several days. We are definitely February in Chicago right now. And I thought we would spend a little bit of time talking about foods that'll warm you up a little bit. These are some recipes that I've done on the TV morning news on my cooking segment over the last, few weeks, month, something like that, since the weather's been kind of cold. I'm not going to be doing a cold weather recipe this coming Wednesday because I had something else planned, which I guess could be a cold weather recipe. I'm going to be doing an old-fashioned rice pudding. It's my mom's recipe for old-fashioned rice pudding that I guess you could eat rice pudding warm, right out of the pot. But, she would put it, and I'll bet a lot of you can relate to this with your moms. My mom would take the empty parquet margarine tubs and put, the little small ones, and put individual servings of rice pudding in that. She had hundreds of them. I don't know how long she had been saving parquet margarine containers or blue bonnet, whatever it was. But you know what I'm talking about, these little plastic mini tubs, right? And really, they're sort of perfect for rice pudding. She put the rice pudding in. She would put a little cinnamon on top of it, put the plastic lid on it, and it's super sealed. It's really quite a good way to, store and serve the rice pudding. You're going to take it someplace, whatever, put it in your parquet margarine containers. That's what my mom did. We found hundreds of them after she passed away. And I wish I had them today. We got rid of them. But anyway, I'm going to make this rice pudding on the TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday. But that's not what I want to focus on today. Because it is super, super cold outside right now. And you need something like really nice and warm. So let me bring back a couple of recipes that I have had so much amazing feedback on since I made some of these things. The beginning of January is when I made a lasagna soup. It is a tomato soup, basically, but it's got all the ingredients that you would put in lasagna. So, including the lasagna sheets, the pasta sheets that you break them up into kind of, bite size. But you can see that the curly pasta noodles are inside of it, along with ground beef and ground sausage. Along with a tomato sauce or a homemade marinara sauce. A little bit of heavy cream goes into it. A little bit of chicken or vegetable broth. Spinach, ricotta cheese, or some people like to say ragotta. I've gotten some emails that I'm not saying it Italian enough. It's ricotta cheese. Parmesan goes into it. Those are some of the ingredients. But let me walk you through this a little bit, because I have had unbelievable favorable feedback on this lasagna soup since I made it at the beginning of January on TV. So what you're going to do is you're going to start off with a soup pot, Dutch oven, whatever. Put your onions and your garlic in there. And saute it all for about a minute or so. Maybe put the onion first and get that a little bit transparent, and then put the garlic. Always put the onion before the garlic, because the garlic will burn up on you in no time at all. And by the way, this recipe is posted. I'll tell you where you can get it in just a second. After you've got the onion and the garlic working in there, take your ground beef and your ground sausage, put that in the pan, and brown it up 7-8 minutes, something like that. Drain not all of the grease out of it, but take most of the grease out of the ground beef and the sausage. Add it to the mixture with the onions and the garlic. By the way, you can use ground turkey or ground turkey sausage. When I made it on TV, I actually made it with ground turkey and ground turkey sausage, and it was delicious in soups, in stews, in chilies. You cannot tell the difference between one or the other. Excuse me. And the turkey sausage is way more healthy for you, but also quite delicious. So now you've got the beef and the sausage. You've got the onions and the garlic together. Take your tomato paste and all of the herbs and spices that are also part of this recipe, which are Italian seasoning, fresh oregano, and parsley. All right? Put all of that in there together. Work all of that around together. Take the marinara sauce, the chicken broth, or if you are, you know, prefer veggie broth, you certainly can do that. I use chicken. And the heavy cream. Put that in with the beef. Bring everything up to a boil and let it cook for a little while. Now, toward the end of this, you're going to let this go for, you know, bring it up to a boil and then let it simmer for 15, 20 minutes, something like that. Then is when you take your lasagna sheets, break them up into bite-sized pieces, put those into the mixture. Take your fresh spinach. You're going to put in about 2 cups of fresh spinach. Put that into the mixture. Cover it, simmer, low simmer, and let that go for a little bit. Now, you don't want this too soupy. You want it a little bit on the thick side. So you decide if you want to, you know, if you need to add a little more broth or not. I tend to like it a little on the thick side, almost like a stew. Salt and pepper to taste, and then when it's done, mix in the ricotta, the ricotte, the Parmesan cheese, and you're all done. You know, just mix it all together. It's nice and creamy now. It's got that wonderful meat in it. It's got the wonderful spinach. It's got the onion, the garlic. It tastes just like lasagna. Just like lasagna. Serve it up into a bowl. Put a little dollop of ricotta on top of it. Sprinkle a little Parmesan cheese over the mixture as well, some fresh chopped basil, and you're good to go. It is a delicious dish for a cold day like we're going to have today. Even better the second day. Now, as I had mentioned, we've got this recipe that is online, and here's how you can get it. If you want to get all the proportions, all the ingredients, everything, all you do is go to where I keep all of my recipes, all of my videos for cooking. Excuse me. I don't know why this is happening every week now in the last hour of the show. WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. I've got the lasagna soup recipe there. I've got all my recipes that I do. All the videos are there. Very, very easy to find. WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. It's not just me saying it's good. I've got tons of reaction emails and texts, messages that people sent me saying they tried it out and they loved it. So if that sounds like something that you might enjoy, go for it. I've got a chili recipe that includes butternut squash and beans coming up next. 12:50 now, Dean Richards. This is true. Food Time Show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program. Today featuring foods that'll warm you up in this cold weather. Some great comfort food recipes, and you're sending some great ones in. 708 area code says, my favorite is stuffed pepper soup. All the same ingredients as stuffed peppers in a tomato-based soup. Very similar to my lasagna soup recipe. I've never made stuffed pepper soup. I got to try that. But that would be so good with, you know, the green peppers and, you know, everything. I put ground beef in my stuffed peppers. I put rice, a variety of, you know, different spices and things like that. I'm going to have to work on that. But that's a good suggestion. Here's another. I love Martha Stewart's beef stew recipe. So I looked it up. And it does look like a really good recipe. It's got, let me see here, beef chuck. It's got pearl onions, tomato paste, Worcestershire, Cabernet Sauvignon. Love that. Chicken broth, fire-roasted tomatoes, carrots, potatoes, frozen peas. That sounds delicious. Season the beef with salt and pepper, dust with flour. Heat it in a Dutch oven, swirling some oil to brown the beef 5 to 7 minutes. Transfer it over to a plate, leaving the fat in the pot. And that's where you put the onions. Basically, you know, it's the same kind of deal. Tomato paste, Worcestershire, you start building your sauce. You know, work it all in there until it's caramelized. It says, return the beef and accumulated juices to the pot with the chicken broth and tomatoes. Bring it to a boil. Cook for an hour and a half. Add the carrots and potatoes and cook for another hour after that. See, a lot of people put everything in all at one time. Got to kind of do it in stages because the potatoes, the carrots, if you cook them for too long, you need to cook it long enough that the beef is going to be melt in your mouth, but not long enough where the potatoes and the carrots are going to be mush. So you got to kind of do it in stages a little bit. Anyway, Martha Stewart's recipe for the beef stew that somebody recommended, it's at MarthaStewart.com, so you can get that. Before I run out of time, I wanted to share another recipe that we did. Gosh, this was a couple of years ago, I think, on our TV cooking segment. For a chili recipe with beef, chunks of beef, and butternut squash and beans. And this was so delicious. This is another one where we got just tons of feedback of people who tried it and they loved it. And this would be a perfect recipe for any, today through the next couple of days where it's going to be ridiculous cold. Chuck roast. Pinto beans, a medium butter squash, a butternut squash that you peel and seed and cut it into half-inch cubes, fire-roasted diced tomatoes, diced regular tomatoes, along with a tomato sauce, tomato paste, a chipotle pepper, an ancho chili pod, so it's got a little bit of spice to it, but also 10 ounces of whole kernel corn. You can put the canned corn in if you want. You can take it right off of cobs. You know, it's more delicious if you roast the corn, you know, on a grill or something and then cut the kernels off. Who's going to do that when it's, you know, zero temperature outside? Can of corn or frozen is fine in something like this. There's red kidney beans in it. There's a can of or bottle of your favorite dark beer. There's chicken stock, a whole bunch of spices, chili powder, garlic powder. There's onion. There's green pepper. There's oregano. You know, there's a lot. There's a lot of ingredients in this, but it is very definitely worth it. So the first thing you do is bake the acorns of the butternut squash until it's slightly soft, you know, these little cubes that you made. Then you're going to take your soup pot or Dutch oven, throw a little oil in there, and brown the cubed beef chunks. Just brown them and then set them aside till you're ready to go back to it. Put the onion and green pepper in there, saute it. Put the tomato paste in there to until it cooks up. You don't want it to taste raw. All the tomatoes, the tomato paste, all the spices go in at the same time. Simmer all that for half an hour or so, and then put the butternut squash back in. Simmer that then for about another hour until everything is pretty fork tender, and then just let it all live together. Very low flame, very low simmer for about an hour. You don't want to burn it. And, get it to the consistency that you like. I tend to like things a little on the thicker side, but maybe you like things, for a chili, maybe you like it a little more soupy. I like it a little thicker. So, you can judge that. Again, if you want to check out this recipe, this is one of our most popular that we've got on our TV cooking segment site, which is WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks. WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks. That's where we keep the recipes. That's where we keep the videos. And that's where I'm going to put my mom's rice pudding recipe this coming Wednesday. I'll be making my mom's rice pudding. It's delicious. It's just the way that she made it. Except I can't find those parquet margarine containers that she used to put them in. Darn, I didn't keep them when we cleaned out her house when she passed away. I didn't keep all the Splenda, and I didn't keep all the parquet margarine containers that she accumulated for decades and decades. So anyway, rice pudding on Wednesday, WGNTV.com/Dean Cooks for all of the recipes. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. If you got a comment or a question or something I can help you with. Somebody from the 773 says, Dean, try the Whole Foods turkey pumpkin chili recipe. That sounds amazing. Wow, think about that. Turkey, I imagine it's like ground turkey, which is delicious. Turkey pumpkin chili. That sounds really good on the Whole Foods website if you're interested in getting more on that. Let me see, what else do we have here? Yeah, there's some pretty good recipes that we've got that are on here. I don't have the actual recipes, but just people making suggestions. Anyway, we'll deal with this more Wednesday when we're actually doing some cooking on TV. That's going to wind it up for us today. Steve Dale is coming up next. And I will see you tomorrow morning on Bob Surratt Show between 8 and 8:30. And, of course, on the WGN-TV Morning News. Tomorrow we are going to be recapping the Saturday Night Live 50th Anniversary Special. I'm sure it's going to be amazing. I can't wait. If you don't watch it, I'll have all the highlights. Lots of great clips, lots of fun, all tomorrow morning, both on Bob's show between 8 and 8:30 and also on the TV Morning News. Also tomorrow morning, I'll be sharing some of my red carpet interviews that I did last week in London for the world premiere of the new Robert Pattinson movie, which is called Mickey 17. Robert Pattinson and his whole cast will share some highlights of that for you as well.